everyone, it's June 8th, 2006, and we're the Image Doctors on Nikonians Talk Radio. I'm Jason Odell.
And I'm Rick Walker.
Thanks for joining us today. So Rick, you're back from Australia.
How was your trip? It was great. Great trip. We'll talk about it a little bit.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, before we get started, I have a special announcement to bring you that this episode of the Image Doctors is brought to you by Adobe Lightroom Beta. The Lightroom Beta is available for download from Adobe's website, www.adobe.com.
Yeah, you can get to it just off of their homepage.
Off their homepage. We'll put a link to the actual beta test link in our show notes for this episode. And you may see the banners running in the Nikonians forums. I believe there's an advertising campaign for that, too. So
thank you, Adobe.
Thanks, Adobe. And check out the Lightroom Beta. It's free to try. They're seeking feedback from photographers to make that product better.
Yep.
It sounds like a great idea.
So let's talk a little bit about what we're going to discuss.
Yeah, what do we got? Well, we want to talk about how your trip to Australia was, because I'm dying to hear that.
We'll do that a little bit later.
We have a new product announced by Nikon just last week, the upgraded D2X, the D2XS.
Excess.
I don't know. We'll have to find
out.
And you got a D200
a while back.
So I figure this is a good time to do a little mini synopsis of your impressions. And
it won't be a full blown review. Those have been done a bunch. But we'll talk a little bit about it.
And then we want to talk about something that we've been doing since, I'd say March, which is Rick and I have been beta testing.
In secret.
In secret. Double secret probation edition of Nikon Capture NX, which is the new release of Capture. It's supposed to come out sometime in July, they say, but there's no date. So we're going to give you a little sneak peek at what we have been learning about some of the new features in Capture NX. So that's the list for today.
Yeah, good list.
Great list. So, I mean, other than a 17 or 15-hour plane flight from Los Angeles, which is, you know, what I always hear about.
It was 14 and a half hours for the leg from L.A. to Sydney and, you know, a couple hours to get from here to L.A. But Australia was great. And what a great place to go. You know, I'll talk about it primarily from a photographer's standpoint. Incredibly rich photographic environment. We were at about four different places in Australia. We spent a couple days in Sydney. Then we were along the Great Ocean Road that goes along the coastline out of Melbourne toward Adelaide. Looks a lot like, if you're familiar with stuff in the U.S., quite a bit like the coastline in Northern California, Southern Oregon. In other words, just plain gorgeous. Then we spent about four nights on Kangaroo Island off the coast near Adelaide, where there are really nice areas for wildlife and national park. Saw lots of kangaroos and koalas and stuff like that. And then spent several days in the middle of the country around Alice Springs, out by what used to be called Ayers Rock, now Uluru, and Katajuda. And
just like Red Rock
also.
Canyon, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But Australia is great. Awfully easy to get around. I mean, you drive in the left, but no big deal after a few minutes is what I've found. I mean, I learned how to do that once. Yeah, I've done it before, too. But it's pretty easy. The only problem is I still trigger the windshield wipers now that I get home instead of the turn signals.
The clutch pedal is still on the left, though.
I'll tell you, the thing I found photographically is that every single place that we were, I could have spent at least a week, if not more than that, just doing photography. There were so many subjects. It was amazing.
Because everything's new to you and you've not been there
before,
right?
I think that was a lot of it. You know, everything looked interesting. Everything looked kind of prehistoric with the vegetation. You know, it looked like a book of dinosaurs that you have when you're 8 years old. Very, very pretty. Lush in a lot of places along the coast with rainforest and stuff. But just, you know, endless subjects. The biggest problem I had was having too many. And trying to balance that with it being a family trip.
So I had to back off a little bit, honestly, and not do quite as much. When we last left off, we were talking about what you were packing for this trip.
And I was trying to be sensible.
There was an element of sensibility.
I failed.
You failed.
I failed.
Okay.
In the end, I panicked.
and we overpacked, didn't we?
We did.
I had this really sensible idea, as
those that listened to the last episode may recall, of, you know, just taking like a 70 to 200 and a 1755 and 1224.
We should have
and
one of those Wayne's World flashback.
Oh, yeah. So that's what I was going to do. It would have been smart, but I panicked. I took the 200 to 400 too. And I also took my X-Pan camera, you know, that does panoramic stuff with film. And if I were going to do it again, I'd leave the 200 to 400 home. I love the lens. I did use it for some shots that were pretty nice of koalas and things like that. And I couldn't have gotten them otherwise. I even had the 1.4 teleconverter on there. But gosh, it was a lot to carry, and it probably would have been nice to have skipped it.
So on a family trip, stick with your 80 to 400.
Yeah, that was the problem. If it was purely a photography trip, I would absolutely have taken it. But it was a lot to lug around. The X-Pan, though, was a lot of fun. I really had a blast using that again. It had been a little while since I'd used it. If you're not familiar with it, it's it uses 35mm film, and I had it loaded up with Velvia 100. That's all I took. And it shoots in a format that's 24mm by 65. It's quite a bit wider than a normal 35mm frame. It's got a Hasselblad label on it, but it's actually made by Fuji. They have a camera under the that's basically the same, different model number. It's unfortunately not manufactured anymore. They just stopped because of some changes on the EU side regarding some of the materials that are used in manufacturing. Mm-hmm. But it's a blast to use. The different format really makes you think differently about your shots and works great for landscapes. And still waiting on the film coming back. Haven't been back long enough to get it.
Blast from the past, waiting for your processing. That's
okay.
All right.
I don't mind it. I like film.
Well, cool.
So we'll see. So that's what I took. And there's some shots up on my website. I did put the shots from the D2X up there. So if anyone wants to see those, they can look on my website, which is geo-vista.com. And you can find the Australia stuff under the gallery section. But we'll put a link in the...
Yeah, I looked at your shots and they were pretty nice.
They were pretty nice.
I like the black and white one conversions that you did too.
That was using the alien exposure thing that we talked about not too long ago.
Yeah. Worked
great.
Very cool.
I used a T-Max 100 setting. And
isn't that just so easy?
Yeah, and also did the color filtration stuff to mimic a color filter. And it worked great. Very easy.
That is very good to know. Yeah. Now, speaking of black and white, I mean, the important thing is you're back, you're safe, you had a great time.
Yeah. Want to go there again.
And you want to, and that's what everyone who I've ever met who's gone to Australia says.
I can't think of a single negative. Honestly can't. Yeah.
You didn't get attacked by a wild, raving, lunatic wallaby.
No. We were safe from the wallabies.
No wombats or?
Not in the wild.
Okay. Well, killer marsupials. Yeah. What more can you ask for?
Yeah, dangerously close to an echidna, but,
It could be not. Okay.
All right.
Well, speaking of black and white, this will segue us into the latest product announcement from Nikon last week, which was expected by some, not by others, an S upgrade to the D2X. Mm-hmm. They've added a little S, and there's been some discussion about that in the D2, D1 forums, obviously, as you might expect. This camera is due to hit the markets hit stores in early July, if not by the end of June.
So pretty darn soon.
Yeah, I mean, everything I've heard, talked to some people, they're saying that it should be July, and based on previous upgrade releases, Nikon's been pretty good about having those rolled out.
And just like there are other S versions of cameras, there was the old 8008 or 801S model and the N90 or F90S.
F4S.
They're
tweaks.
They're tweaks. Yeah. The changes in it are nice. They're very thoughtful ones. They're things that people have talked about. Some surprises, though.
Yeah.
But they're not huge changes, so I would think the risk of delayed isn't too high.
The good news for, depending on how you're looking at it, the D2X itself will be discontinued. That means right now is a very good time to pick up a D2X because the $500 rebate is still in effect, at least here in the United States, and I'm sure elsewhere is probably something similar. That means you can pick up a D2X body today for close to $3,500 U.S., maybe a little less.
Yeah, depends on where you buy it.
That's a good price for that camera. And the reason why is because rumor has it, and it's been confirmed elsewhere and discuss in our forums, that a lot of the S upgrades are actually software related, and many of them will be making their way at some point into a firmware upgrade for existing D2X bodies.
Pretty good number of them.
Now, the official list of what those are is not yet available, so we'll find out. But let's talk a little, just real quick, summarize what's in the D2XS. From a hardware standpoint, it's supposed to have a better LCD display, same size LCD. They say it's individually calibrated at the factory. Now, if that means it's color calibrated, that sounds really, really great. I know that the color is not something I trust entirely on the LCD because I know it's not calibrated. The bigger deal, though, is the wider viewing angle, like 170-degree horizontal viewing angle. That's not bad. I mean, that's a nice little touch.
Honestly, I've never had a problem with either of those things.
Neither have I.
But why not?
They've also changed the focusing screen to gray out the edges of the frame when you enter high-speed crop area, which is kind of cool.
Not a big deal. But why not?
They've made a few changes to the functionality of the function button. They've added more incremental steps between ISO 800 and the high ISO settings.
That's a good thing.
So now if you wanted to, you could in theory say set your camera to 1/3 of a stop above 800 instead of a full stop. And noise control, that can be a good thing.
Yeah, because there's a pretty good jump in noise when you go from 800 to 1600. Right. And if you really don't need the full jump, why not just a part of that?
And we will point out, I mean, they're not called 1600 and 3200 on the camera because they're not in spec ISO ratings. They're steps above. So, you know, use at your own risk. But I've used 1600 and it's okay. I don't like 3200, but I've used 1600. So this will just give you a little more flexibility. It also adds some ability to create more flexibility in the way you set up auto ISO. If that's something you use, you can set a minimum shutter speed.
There's some very cool things
that I think that I'm hoping that those show up in the firmware upgrade. And a black and white mode.
Right.
Which is pretty cool for some people who want to shoot NEF, because according to the specs I read, you shoot in black and white mode for your NEF, it still retains the color data. You can always process it as
just
a color the other
tag.
Way. Yeah. But for workflow streamlining, if you want to shoot in black and white, we'll see how it works. I mean, you know, maybe it's great.
Yeah.
Maybe you still want to do it in post-processing. I don't know, but it's an option, especially for JPEGs.
Again, you know, they're not big things, but they're nice things.
Yeah.
So why not?
I mean, absolutely. And by no means does this make your D2X obsolete.
No. Like you were saying, it now becomes a really great buy.
Right.
So grab them while they're hot.
You know, I kind of rate this along the same lines as some of the upgrades to the D70. Whereas the D2HS was much more on the hardware side. You know, there was not an upgrade path because you can't upgrade the buffer. There's no buffer upgrade this time. There's no real change in sensor. This is the same camera just with better functionality.
Right.
So we're looking forward to seeing that when it comes out. Now, you brought your D200 today.
Yep, sure did. And I've been using that for a little while now, you know, as a backup camera to the D2X.
And what's your... So we thought we'd offer our first impressions. We know the camera's been out for a while.
And this isn't a review. This is more of just, you know, user thoughts and comments on it, having used it for a while. But I can tell you, I'm very impressed by it. I think it's one of the nicest handling Nikons so far. You know, I think the top of my list is probably the F6 still. That's just an awfully nice camera. F3 is good. FM, FE series is good. But this is right up there. And it's a nice size. It's not too heavy, but it feels very, very solid compared to some of the previous ones, like the D100 in particular.
Yeah, and this feels similar to that, but even better.
Oh, it feels a lot better. Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry. I meant the F100, which I always sort of define as a nice, solid camera. This camera feels a lot like the F100.
Yeah, even a little bit better, a little bit nicer contours and stuff. You can tell that Nikon has continued working on its ergonomics, and it really shows up in the grip, the controls, you know, which are a lot like the D2X.
Cool.
D2X is good, too. It's just a little bit bulkier and heavier. So when I'm using this camera, you know, good example is when we were down there in Texas doing the shooting on the ranches, I brought it with me so I could take some quick snaps of
those ugly
blinds.
Ugly folks in blinds.
Oh, God,
that was us.
Yeah. But it was pretty handy for that. I'm using it for other things where the smaller size and lightweight is nice. But let's talk a little bit about the features and how it works in the field.
Right. I mean, I guess the camera that everyone... Well, there's two places where everybody compared this camera to. You know, it's the replacement of a D100, obviously.
Right.
But then because the sensor is 10 plus 10.2 megapixel sensor, it's a CCD sensor. Am I correct in that?
Yeah.
Okay, unlike the D2X.
Which is CMOS.
Which is a CMOS sensor. So...
No biggie either way, really.
Right. It doesn't matter.
Right.
So it's either compared to a D100 or a D2X. And,
yeah.
and obviously this is everything that the D100 was and 10 times more.
Oh, yeah.
And from everything I've seen and playing with it, and, you know, I've handled it a couple of times, yours, my dad's, a few other people have them. It just handles really nice, and it is like a D2X in the menus and the settings and all that stuff seems very similar.
Yeah, I would say it's a heck of a lot like a D2X in almost every way.
I mean, you have the custom settings,
yeah,
which is four banks of shooting settings, and then the custom settings, and you can adjust everything until your heart's content and customize the settings. Compared to the D2X, it's a little bit less resolution. Now, do you see any difference, really?
It's not much at all. I knew people would ask about that or want to know about that, and so one of the things that I did was to take some shots with both cameras, identical circumstances, you know, the same time, same lens, same settings, the whole gamut, and really the way that you can tell where the difference is if you start resing up the images, taking them up to a higher grid size. And what I did was 30 by 40, 20 by 30, something like that, you know, in that ballpark. I can't remember the exact measurements, but a big print to really amplify the differences. And I'll tell you, they were small. You could see a little bit of an improvement in the D2X image, just a little bit more clarity. But it wasn't much at all. I think reality is you'd be happy with both. And
right. I mean, let's face it. You can get a pretty darn good image from a 6-megapixel camera.
Yeah.
So
as long as you know what to do in post-processing, you can get wonderful images from 4-megapixel cameras.
Right.
So there's very little difference. I really wouldn't make that the deciding factor in terms of which camera to get. It'd probably be more a matter of form function, things like the high-speed crop. Do you want the 8 frames per second at times? The form factor, you know, what do you like?
Yeah,
about
so I
that?
Mean, if you own a D70, you know, the D200 is a pretty substantial upgrade in terms of resolution, in terms of shooting speed, better bracketing, just a lot more better build quality, a lot of the stuff across the board. The difference between that and then the D2X is, do you need to be able to occasionally shoot at 8 frames per second? D200 goes to 5 frames a second. It doesn't offer the high-speed crop mode.
Yeah. But there is the personal preference, too, and just
the
feel
build.
Of it, the layout.
Yeah.
And, you know, years ago when I was, I think I had been using an F4 up to that point, I thought, okay, the F5 is now out. That looks pretty good. I waited a little while just to... see what people thought about. And then I went out and started looking at it, and then the F100 came out in the same time frame. So I was actually able to compare the two and see what I thought. I thought seriously about the F100 initially just because of the cheaper price. But after handling the two, I decided the one that I would rather shoot with most of the time was the F5. And so that's what
so
I
So you like a larger body with the integrated...
Well, there's more to this story.
You know,
I do.
Sometimes.
Yeah, that's the key. And what I found was after using the F5 for a while, it was great, but, you know, lugging it around the streets of Paris or in England or stuff like that, it's like, I don't know.
Right.
You know, I liked the way it operated and everything, and it was still my primary camera, but I ended up getting an F100 as my backup, and it became the camera I used when I traveled a lot. And what I've done is replicated that same setup now digitally.
Right.
You know, the D2X will be my primary camera, just like it was in the trip to Australia. D100 D200 becomes the backup. And if I'm not shooting with bigger lenses where the bigger body's kind of nice from a balance standpoint, then I'll use the D200 just because the smaller size is nice.
And so one of the biggest differences between the D200 and all the other cameras in Nikon's lineup is it has yet another autofocus system. And this is another thing that's been compared to the D2X and also the D70. Clearly superior to the autofocusing module in the D70, D50, and D100.
Oh, yeah.
This is the new Multicam 1000 autofocus system. It's a little different from the D2X autofocus system. They both have 11 sensors, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the layout of the pattern of the sensors is completely different.
Yeah, and you can also do some grouping things with the D200 sensors to group a couple sensors together.
Very cool.
To a large one. Yeah, it's a good thing. You know, the things I've read are the D2X autofocus system remains a little bit quicker, and I believe that.
Yeah, well, that's because it has more cross-type sensors, right?
Yeah.
So in theory, in lower light situations, it should perform better.
Yeah, I honestly haven't stretched it too much, the D200 one, and that's just primarily because of the way I'm using it. They're not situations where you really need a super fast autofocus system. I haven't been doing the bird photography.
Right.
Or
and some of it will
photography.
Depend on the lens you've got on your camera.
Sure.
So that, that's one thing too. I mean, if you're shooting with fast glass, you probably won't see too much of a difference.
Right.
Because there's more light hitting those sensors.
Yeah. And that's, the low light situations are where you need the cross sensors a lot. But from what I've seen, autofocus system works great. And in normal use, it's, completely adequate and very good. A lot better than those older cameras that you were mentioning.
Yeah, and just the sheer number of sensors just makes it easier for you to select an autofocus point that would be useful to a particular composition that you have. So
now one thing that did bug me about the D100 in the past, and that was a good camera and produced good images, but the viewfinder was small. It was
that little tunnel vision.
Regular 35mm finder that was cropped down to the digital format. No fancy optics put in, just cropped down. So it was a small image, and the D70s got the same issue in the D50. And you can get by, but it's small, and when you're manually focusing, which I do a lot, it is a little bit tough. So the D200 has a bigger viewfinder. It's immediately obvious. And the one of the things one of the things I do is use a DK21M, I think it's called. It's the magnifying eyepiece.
Mm-hmm.
And we've both got the equivalent thing on our D2X.
The DK17M.
Right.
Whatever.
Yeah, they're both, right around 20% magnification. I think the D200 is slightly less than that. And with that on there, the image size is pretty close to what you'd find in a film camera.
Right, with no real appreciable distortion.
No, it's pretty clear. And so it's a very usable thing. I would recommend it to people that are using a D200. It may be a problem if you're using eyeglasses. I haven't tried that because I don't normally wear them. But if you're not an eyeglass wearer, I give it a shot because I really like the larger image size. So that I think, is an important feature that came in with the D200 compared to the older ones.
Despite the fact that Nikon doesn't specifically designate the D200 as a quote-unquote pro body, it's a pro body.
Oh, yeah.
The build is solid. There's weather sealing on this body.
And the thing is, the pro body thing is, that really doesn't mean a whole lot.
It doesn't mean much at all. But I think it does have certain ramifications for the way certain things are set up in the camera.
Mm-hmm.
When you compare a D70 to a D2X, for example, the D2X does not have program modes. The D2X does not have a lot of things set up for in-camera processing necessarily. You might have to use some of those custom functions to set your camera up more than you would if you just went and bought a D50 or a D70.
True.
So the D200 is more like that.
Yeah, it's just like the case was with the F100, although I think it did have a few of those little fancy program modes.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely a camera more for the serious photographer.
Right.
Someone
you're
that really
to
wants to get into their photographs, figure out how to use the right aperture, the shutter speed.
Exactly.
Yeah. And not trust the camera to do everything.
And while from what I've heard, the D200 produces outstanding JPEGs,
mm-hmm.
You still might want to find yourself tweaking the settings to get the optimized image, whether it's sharpening or color mode or mm-hmm. or anything else. You might find yourself spending a little bit of time in post-processing with D200 images.
Just like the D2X.
Just like the D2X.
In fact, exactly. What I've found is the same settings that I use, you know, for sharpening and everything for the D2X apply quite well for the D200.
So what settings do you have your D200 set at by default?
Well, you know, a lot of times, we've talked about this, a lot of times I will just, I know this is a, you know, one of those taboo things seemingly, but a lot of times I will sharpen right out of capture because I don't normally do a whole lot of tweaking of colors or tone settings in Photoshop. Most of the time I do not. And if I do something, it's fairly minor. So what I will do is here's the way I use capture right now, and same way I've been using capture in X, is I will shoot with the sharpening set to high when I take the photo, and I shoot in RAW pretty much 100% of the time. Mm-hmm. And the reason I set it to high is just, you know, if I have to do anything quick and dirty with the image, it's not a bad starting point. It's a little bit of a crude setting, but it's not bad. It doesn't look over sharpened in general. And then what I'll do is when I process the RAW file, I have a little settings file that I can just apply automatically, and it turns off that in camera sharpening setting and turns on the unsharp mask parameters in Capture, which is not the same as unsharp mask in Photoshop.
It's, right.
It's not the
it's
same
different.
Thing. Yeah. It's a much better sharpening routine. And then I set it to 55... 5.4, is the setting I used. And it looks awfully good. In fact, you know, we were talking in a previous program about RAW Shooter and the fact that it does a very good job sharpening images on mm-hmm. its default settings. That 55.5.4 setting on a D2X or a D200 produces results that are virtually identical to what RAW Shooter does. It
so
looks
this is
the
in
same.
Post-processing, and yeah. I would agree with you. My philosophy with my experience with Nikon's in-camera sharpening for JPEGs, when I use a JPEG, because a lot of times I'll shoot mm-hmm. a JPEG along with my RAW file, I always set it to high. It's not that it's over-sharpened. I think Nikon's philosophy is this is the maximum amount of sharpening that we will give to this image that we know will be safe mm-hmm. and not cause artifacts.
Right.
That means that it's quite possible that your image may withstand further sharpening.
Oh, yeah.
To get, you know, but it's a conservative amount. Mm-hmm. I never set it to none if I'm shooting JPEGs. I always set it to high.
Now, what I do is if the image is one where for some reason I'm going to do a lot more post-processing work on it in Photoshop, then I won't do the sharpening there. I'll just turn it off
and just mess with
go
it.
Go ahead and do
else.
The Photoshop stuff. That's a 5% of my images right. kind of thing, but I do that, I'll do it in Photoshop instead. And then what I do is I use the PhotoKit sharpener, which I normally just use for printing only, but I'll use it for a capture sharpening at some point. And then I've got it tweaked to look about the same as those capture settings that I was just mentioning.
Very cool.
But that's what I do.
So in general, when we do, we've done some reviews on the Nikonian's review in uh-huh. the past about lenses and things like that. And at the end of the review, we like to sort of, you know, our signature was to say, you know, this is good for you if you do this. You might not want to have it, mm-hmm. you know. The D200, who should buy one? You know, what kind of Nikonian, what kind of photographer is this on the money for?
Well, I think it handles a lot of the more serious photographers that are on our site, you know, that want a digital body, that don't prefer film. There's obviously a budgetary consideration. It's a whole lot cheaper than things that existed in the past, and is probably better than most of them. But it's still not a cheap camera. So
retails
if you're
about $1,700.
Yeah.
US,
so if you're on a budget, things like a D50 and a D70S are still wonderful cameras. If it is an affordable price point, and you're looking for something that's well made, that's the one I would first suggest to people. And then the D2X, I think, are for people that first can spend a little bit more money and might be looking for that faster frame rate on occasion, mm-hmm. as well as things like the high-speed crop, like the form factor of the camera
right.
and the weight. And like I said, most of the time
longer
I do.
Longer battery life.
Longer battery life and you know a few other little niceties like that. But boy, the D200 is the one that I would look at first.
Great. And you know, if you're looking for you know a lot of program modes, does the D200 offer that too? Or
mm-hmm. okay. Well, you're talking
or
about
would you rather have a D70? Is a D70 still going to be a good camera for,
yeah,
for
I don't,
most?
You know, I honestly haven't looked, I guess. But I don't think the D200 has those kind of program okay. modes.
So if you're a casual shooter, you should probably stick with something like a D70.
Yeah.
If you are really getting into it in advance and you want something and you're got the patience and the tools to take advantage of the high-res sensor, mm-hmm. a D200 is a great place to look.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. So we can't say anything bad about the D200, and, you know, off the top of our head. It's a great camera. Nikon really hit one out of the park with it.
About the only thing you ever hear is a little bit of noise, and I personally don't find it
and that's
to
nitpicking,
be bad,
I think.
Yeah. And, you know, get yourself Noise Ninja or Neat Image
right.
and clean it up a little.
We want to end with a discussion of Nikon Capture NX, and we have to admit that we're a little biased here. We prefer Nikon Capture 4 as our RAW converter of choice.
Yeah, and it's not perfect. It's
no, but it suits our style.
Issues.
It suits the way we do our workflow. And specifically, you and I have a very similar workflow in that we shoot digitally like we used to shoot slides.
Mm-hmm.
Take a bunch of pictures, come back, weed out the keepers.
We're stuck in the past.
Yeah, you know. And then we evaluate the best shots, and we then make individual tweaks, usually on an image-to-image basis.
Yeah, and I don't post-process any of the others. It's just the ones that I like and that I'm going to do something with.
And so for that kind of approach to workflow, Nikon Capture works really well, and we like its rendering engine.
Mm-hmm.
So back in March, we were approached by Nick Software with an opportunity to beta test Capture NX, which is coming out soon. Capture NX is an evolution of Capture.
It has the same basic rendering engine.
Right. I mean,
it does have
it
the
has
same
the same
engine.
Render. You start
the images
with
will
the,
look
same,
the same.
Same point.
Which, as we were talking about earlier, we like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good thing from my standpoint.
Now, what Nikon did was they have contracted out, they were bought part ownership of or something of Nick Software. So Nick Software has been incorporating their technology into the newer version of Capture. And
it's kind of a hybrid of some things that Nick had done before with some of their tools.
Exactly.
I'd used a few of those in the past, along with what was in current version of Capture.
And I should point out, a lot of these tools you can use on JPEGs or TIFFs or whatever. They'll still open those files. As of right now, Capture NX, there are no plans to open other RAW file formats with it. It's a Nikon product. It is for Nikon NEF files. So that's what you get. Probably the most interesting and most talked about thing is this U-point technology or the control points.
Well.
And I've been enjoying these.
Yeah, I think that is a really cool feature. It doesn't mean that this stuff can't be done any other way, because you can do some things using masks and Photoshop and things like that. But I'll tell you, I think this is going to be a very popular thing with most people, because it is incredibly easy to do things like, say you've got a sky that's just a little bit lighter than you would have preferred for whatever reason. Maybe you're trying to expose for a darker foreground. Click on it, you know, set a color control point up on the sky. And then you can just do some very
slider
adjustments.
You can adjust
for brightness,
the
for saturation.
And the size of the effect, sort of the overall radius of how far you want to extend into the image.
It's like a magic wand thing in Photoshop that works a lot better than magic wand.
It does.
Ever
I was going to say that. It's got a similar feeling to it, but it seems to work better.
Yeah.
Then by selecting additional control points. Okay, let's say, for example, you clicked a point on your sky and you made it that nice shade of blue, but maybe it was just picking up a little bit in some foliage or some grass somewhere. It was altering the brightness there. You could click on the grass and just leave that control point alone and not adjust it, and it sets it back to keeping those pixel values the way they were.
Right.
Now, like Rick said, you could do this in Photoshop. It might take a little bit more time. You guys are Photoshop gurus and wizards and great at making masks. Don't change what you're doing. There's nothing wrong with that. But remember we said non-destructive editing? You're doing this in your NEF file. You can go back at any time and zap this out. And it doesn't, at least to our experience, it has not radically increased the file size of the NEF when you add these points in. Which I don't know how that's happening, but it's amazing how it does it.
Yeah. So the nice thing is you don't have multiple file versions sitting on your hard drive cluttering up space.
Right.
Now, maybe not the biggest thing in the world, but it's kind
of
nice.
Speaking of multiple versions, that's something I found in Capture NX. It has a before and after. You can compare the original process with what modifications you made in a sort of a split window.
Right.
And that's kind of neat.
Yeah, it's got an integral file browser.
Right. So that gets rid of the multi-image window.
Which was never
good. I hated it.
I never used it.
Sorry, Nikon, I hated it.
Yeah, it wasn't good. Didn't
so you can cut and paste and apply your batch, your sweeping changes from one file into other ones from the batch. In addition to the U points, which we talked about, the other really powerful thing is that what you couldn't do in Capture that you can do in Capture NX is make selections. U points are one way of making selections. It's like making a mask. But you can use, it's got a standard suite of selection tools like a lasso tool and a paintbrush selection tool and gradient selection tool and like fill, I think, are the ones you can do. And you can combine these in and select certain areas to apply your effects to. And what I really like about that is that it allows you to apply an effect like, say, sharpening or the LCH editor to a selection. Let's say you want to paint in, or let's say you want to use unsharp mask of a particular setting, 50%, 5 radius, and 4 levels, you know, your favorite USM.
My favorite setting.
That's what I said. It's your favorite. Right.
Yeah.
it's a good starting point setting. But you only want to sharpen part of your image. Well, you can now set that tool to be that amount and just paint it right in, which I think is a little easier than doing the same thing in Photoshop. And again, it's a if you don't sharpen in a layer in Photoshop, that's destructive editing.
Right.
So any sharpening artifacts you get, once you save the file, if you flatten the layer, it's there. So for people like me who are not complete experts in Photoshop.
Or like me.
Then that's a cool thing. A couple other things that I've just noticed in my observation. You know, all the familiar Capture tools are there, the LCH editor.
Let's talk about that just really briefly. That's one of those things that a lot of people don't know about. They've never
tried
LCH
it. The LCH editor.
Yeah, in the current version of Capture.
It's a great tool.
It's a really good tool. And I didn't really know much about it until maybe 6 months ago.
I started fooling with it too.
And it's got a combination of a levels/curves function, just like you find in another part of Capture. But then it's also got the ability to do selective adjustments to color brightness, color saturation. Is really easy.
You can
to
do hue too, I think.
Yeah, you
can't you do?
So,
I think so.
Something like that. I don't do that much.
Lightness, chroma, hue. It's LCH.
Yeah, I just mainly mess with the chroma, which is the saturation, and the brightness, as well as the levels and curves kind of thing. But what's really nice is if you want to do something just to bump up the overall saturation of your image, you can do that very easily. You can also do selective bumps. So if you want to do something to bump up the greens and reds a bit more, it's extremely easy to do
or
that.
Or bump down.
Or blues or whatever you want.
It's really cool. And it has an eyedropper tool, so you can click on the image. It will put the point on that color area in the LCH window, showing the sort of color palette overall. And then you can just move that point up and down to change the saturation or the lightness or whatever. And it's one of those.
Try it if you have current Capture.
It's not very well explained in the documentation, but I'll tell you, it's an incredibly powerful tool. And that tool makes it into Capture NX as well.
It looks just the same.
It looks just the same. A few other things before we talk about some of our little nitpicks. There is the capacity in Capture NX to do soft proofing, which is a tremendous improvement over the previous version. Because there was no soft proofing. That means if you have a profile for your printer and your monitor is calibrated, you can say, show me this as it would look coming out of my printer, and then you can make your color adjustments, again, in a non-destructive way.
So if you have the profiles for different papers loaded in there, just like most people do, is picking. So I set it up just like my Photoshop is set up.
And so have you, I haven't printed anything out of it. Have you tried it or?
I haven't printed directly.
But it does seem to work.
I always print, what I do, and I know it's the same thing that you do, is I do all the major adjustments in Capture. Mm-hmm. There are a few little things that I'll do in Photoshop still.
Right.
Up until this point, I've been doing, you know, some masking in Photoshop, not a lot, although I did get a little bit more efficient at that recently. And I do like the shadow highlight feature of Photoshop a little bit better than the thing that Capture has had. That never worked well for me. Digital D or
the
D-lighting.
Or,
it's been called different things at different times. The tuning of it is
a little
bit
funky
off
in places.
And it still needs to be fixed in NX, by the way.
But maybe they'll fix it before they release it.
So those kind of things I do in Photoshop and some final sharpening with some plugins.
You know what I like about NX is the crop tool has a grid on it. Now, maybe Photoshop has it. I've never found it. But I've never found a grid on the... So it has rule of thirds grid lines effectively on the crop tool if you choose to turn them on. Which if you're making a crop and you want to put your subject right on one of those rule of thirds points, boy, that's cool. So I just thought that was neat. Is it a make or break point? No, but I thought it was cool. It's certainly a nice touch. You know, they're thinking about photographers when they're designing this. And we should mention that part of the reason why we were asked to help review this is because we are photographers, and there's lots of people out there who are beta testing the software. I think I was reading on Nikon's website, Moose Peterson, others are beta testing this too. I mean, Nick is listening to photographers for their suggestions about how to make this product work better. And that's what they're trying to do. So at least in terms of what their mission is, I like the approach.
Now let's talk a little bit about the nitpicks, because we do have a few. We fed back, and you know, we do definitely get the sense that they're thinking.
And at this point, there may be things that could be changed. So, you know, we're talking about a beta, so we can't say for sure what will make it into the final 1.0 version.
The one thing I find is that compared to the older Capture, where you could see all the adjustments laid out pretty clearly on the screen and really easy to get to, some of those are a little bit too buried.
Yeah. Kind of have to unlock them with little fold-down
windows.
Yeah,
and if you're
windows.
Operating with a monitor that's fairly high resolution, some of the little icons that you click on and stuff are a little bit small.
Right.
Just a little bit fiddly. It's not really bad or anything like that. It just, my suggestion would be to make that a little bit bigger and expose them.
The histogram window right now is a little bit small.
It's too small. It needs to be at least about 50% bigger, in my opinion.
But because some of their windows you can't really enlarge like you can the control panels in Capture. And I think those are coming. I think they're aware of these
features. I think that's a little bit of the beta stuff.
Right. So we could be just talking about something that, you know, so don't take our word that it's set in stone like that.
Right. This is more a review of where it's at now.
Right. And I guess that's something to keep in mind, too. Capture made it to version 4.4.1, which is what I have. And I think it's 4.4 is the Windows version.
Right.
Capture NX is a whole new program, and that's what they've told us from the beginning. It's a whole different program. So this is essentially Capture NX version 1.0.
Yeah, it looks different.
It runs different.
Some new functions. The as I was mentioning earlier, the imaging engine underneath, at least for some stuff, is the same, but the rest of it is really pretty
there's
different.
There's a lot of, you know, and there's a lot of the new Nix. So this, you have to think of it as a 1.0 release, not a 5.0 release like you might think based on the evolution of Nikon Capture as you know it from the past. So, you know,
there'll be changes.
There will be some changes. And I already know from talking to them that they're already looking at stuff that will make it into the immediate, you know, things that won't quite make the 1.0, but will be added into the, you know, features
1.1
that they'll be tweaking it. So they're very straightforward about, you know, getting updated versions in a timely manner. So what's this going to cost us? Is the question. Nikon announced last week that Capture NX will be $149. If you already own Capture 4, it will be an $89 upgrade. At least that's the retail suggested price. It's quite possible that you may be able to get this a little cheaper from a retail outlet.
Yeah.
But that's the suggested price. And You know, that's in the middle of all these raw converters that we've been reviewing. I mean, the cheapest ones are around $80. Well, free, okay, for raw shooter essentials, but...
And that's not you know, like we talked about before, that's not a bad raw converter.
No. And then other ones are sometimes pushing $300, depending on what you're getting. Yeah. The one big difference, though, is capture control is no longer going to be bundled with Capture NX. It'll be a separate program and cost $69 MSRP, and I don't know anything about it. I don't know what features it will have that are good, bad, or otherwise. Who knows? But what I have found is that Capture NX on my computer right now is not disabling the current version of Capture Control in any way.
And you're running on a Mac. Mm-hmm. I'm running on a Windows machine, and it's not causing a problem with either one.
My hunch is that if you have Capture Control from the previous edition,
leave it.
You know, leave it. Now, I don't work in a studio, so it's no big deal.
No, I've never used it.
Yeah, I mean, I've used it just to see that
the
I could
tone
do
curves
it.
And screwing up my photos from Australia with leaving the tone
with custom
curve
tone.
There, I don't use
so
it.
So I'm sure there are going to be some really good features in Capture Control Pro, but we don't know what they are. So that'll have to be another podcast.
More to come later.
So that's our. I mean, my feeling is that when it comes, you know, having used it, when it comes out, I will go out and buy it. You know, that doesn't change the fact that I already liked Nikon Capture.
Right. We admitted our bias earlier.
But that's, yeah, exactly. I see it as a worthy upgrade with enough new features, enough things that are designed to enhance the performance. You know, I'm seeing it work pretty well on my computer right now. But again, you know, these betas, sometimes you get a good one, sometimes you get one that's got bugs in it. So
yeah, and we're not talking a whole lot about performance just because with beta software
you just don't know where it stands. No. So the final version I'm sure will be really good.
We're not seeing anything bad either.
Yeah.
But we've both got good PCs though that are pretty up to date.
Absolutely. And this does process the image differently than Capture in the terms of how it handles the image file. So so there are some stuff where the speed can be vastly improved, like zooming into 100%. I can say that already is much better.
But there are some differences between a program that uses sidecar files.
Right.
And
that's true with the current version of Capture, too. When you do a batch or you save a NEF, it takes a certain amount
of time.
You're
saving the file.
You're saving the whole 20, 25 megs or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And when you use a raw converter like ACR or Bibble or, you know, any of those other ones that use a XMP sidecar to save the changes in, the changes are very fast because it's only writing 100K worth of data into that sidecar.
A little bitty file.
You know.
On the other hand, you've got multiple files to deal with and things like that. But
I mean, there's pros and cons.
Exactly.
So that's what we think. That's our initial impression.
So the last thing that we should mention is just like the current version of Capture, all your in-camera settings are used. That's different than the other RAW converters out there.
Oh, right.
So tone curves, tone settings, sharpening settings, color modes, all of those things get seen by NX, just like.
And I should point out, I've tried this. All of the core RAW conversion edits that you can do, like you have in Capture 4 right now, which are preserved in Capture NX, make the file to a limited extent backward compatible. If I were to give you a file that I saved from NX and you use Capture 4, it would open it. It wouldn't process all of the new steps that are in outside
the control points
and all that stuff that's exclusive to NX. But if I made any changes to the raw file in what they call the base settings or the, you know, sort of that core, you know, like exposure compensation and any
white balance,
any of those, the raw initial sharpening or whatever, that would be read by Capture 4 and you could send that.
Yeah, so at least what I'm seeing, it backwards and forwards compatibility is
good. That's a good thing.
Yeah, it is.
So,
that means you don't have to redo changes that you've made to old RAW files.
Or if it means if you have someone, you have a NEF and you save it and you make some tweaks to it, then you save it and you send it to someone who's using Capture and doesn't have NX, they'll be able to still open that. So that's a good thing. Well, that is
think that's about it.
I think that is about it. Next time, we want to talk a little bit about whatever comes to mind, so send us your emails. But one thing I was thinking that we would talk about is product that I picked up after we talked about it. Our podcasts are dangerous even to ourselves. You listeners who say, you're costing us money. We cost ourselves money, guys.
It's worse for us.
It's worse. And I had recommended the Gary Fong Light Sphere to a reader about shooting weddings. And I thought, I should try that thing. So I went and plunked down the $50 or so and ordered one a couple of weeks ago, and I got it. And it's a big diffusion dome. And I think we'll do a little review of that product next time because it's neat.
Yeah. And we got some other topics coming up in the not-too-distant future.
We still have more rock
had an
converters.
Intent to do.
We still have more rock converters out there.
We've got that. We've got a sports photography topic.
That's right.
You're going to do some things there in the future.
I'm going to do some neat stuff in the future.
Yeah. Workshop.
And
I'll hear about what you do.
Spending even more of my wife's money.
And then I think we made a promise to do some lens valuations, I think the 2870 and the 1755.
Oh, comparison, yes. Yeah. So all of these stuff, believe me, when you're emailing us, we get the emails, we love the feedback, we really appreciate it. Send them to talkradio@nikonians.org. You can get to us, check out the show notes on the podcast webpage. There's, so if you're getting this through iTunes, don't forget that there's that podcast page with the show notes and links to all these things. And thank you once again to Adobe Lightroom for sponsoring this week's episode of the Image Doctor. So don't forget to check that out at adobe.com. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.
All right. Bye-bye.